If you don't mind, I would first like to give a little lesson about theater, because I think we have to discuss whether theater is or dance is an art, and what is art. It's all starting from a certain concept of what art is. That concept is always a bit in the vague, and nowadays, as theater is a kind of half-dead art form, it has grown and it has taken its final its form in the 15th century, let's say, and it has developed into a huge art form in the 18th century. Then it was really like the most important thing you could be in or do, and it was still important in the 19th century. But nowadays, as an art form, it's not very visible anymore. It still has a lot of importance, but actually the real public is like 1% or less of the total population. So the things that have an impact are not in the theater. They're on television or wherever, but not in the theater. The theater has become kind of small detail next to the real world of entertainment. So I think it's maybe interesting to look at what this box really was, what this theater was as a form, and how we still relate to that. Because I think that any theater nowadays is still referring to and is working with a model that is in fact very old. You can make any kind of experimental theater, you can put people on the street and play something in front of a window so that people have to watch you. But all this still always goes back to kind of fundamental idea of what theater is and where people are reacting to all the time. So actually any theater that's been made now is like a reaction to or a kind of way of working with a very old model of doing things, of representing things. And so I think it's maybe interesting to that I give a small lesson about this, like say half an hour, and I think it will be very relevant, because actually what I'm talking about is the public. Yesterday also, and the day before, we were talking a lot about how public reacts to, or how it is spoken to, by performance. And the real problem of theater these days is that actually the public has lost its place. And I want to explain that a little bit, and then we go on. So the first thing is, what is theater? It's what? One, it's a game. Now, what is typical of a game is that it has a certain time, and that the time is really defined. So it's not endless. It starts somewhere and ends somewhere. It has a certain space. It has very definite rules, and this is very different from ordinary life, where rules are not there, or rules are always temporary. In a game, there's rules, and you can change the rules during the game, but still, there's rules. That's also a way you can spoil a game, is by not following the rules. So. And also, people who are taking part in the game are not themselves. Of course, they engage completely in it, but still, it's not serious. So this is a very specific structure of a game, is that you completely engage in it, you can be completely honest in it, or dishonest, or whatever, but it's like you're standing just next to yourself. You're not acting for yourself, you're acting, in a sense, in an irresponsible way. It's a little bit next to yourself that you're acting, even if you're completely enthusiastic about this. It's kind of role thing that is always there in a game. Xavier Leroy, the French choreographer, has been testing this a lot. And in the Extensions project, he has been thinking a lot about this. When is a game becoming theater? Like children play games, and you can see that they make up rules, even if it's a game that they invent on the spot. They make rules. You are this, and you are that, so they're like distributing new names to each other, and all these things really happen in the game. But it is not, and that is, of course, very special in theater. It's for a public. The things are not played for themselves. They have a kind of goal outside of themselves. But, and that's also very different, they're not like artistic performances. That's something you do once, and in theater you repeat it. You can repeat it all the time. So it's not like a fact, something that you add to history, to art history. Like a performance is something you do once, and you do it to add a new idea to art history. That's not the case in theater. It's something that is repeatable. So it's not like sports or child's game. It's not like an artistic performance. And it's not either like a ritual. In the procession, actually, you're always taking part and spectator at the same time. Mm. This is not true in theater. Mm. You're or spectator or player, but you're not both at the same time. So it's a huge difference. A ritual also is not meant to be seen. It's not meant to be a spectacle. It is a spectacle, of course, for somebody who's watching it from the outside, but it is not meant like that. So in a ritual, you're kind of witness. You're, in fact,
participant.
No, you're a witness of, and you're making it true. Ritual has this quality where the earnestness in which everybody takes part makes a kind of holy thing become real. But that's not like theater. Theater makes nothing real. Ah, yeah, and also, of course, it's not television. And why is it not television? Because in television there is a huge distance. And there's no direct involvement or presence from the one who's on the TV and the one who's in the living room. The spectator has to be there, otherwise no theater. So then you could say that the basic form of a theater is this, that there's a stage and there's public around. But so on the marketplace, for instance, you would have this, that the stage is not even really defined. So there's a stage. And the public is around, but there's no actual border. So we come from actually the totally basic situation. It's simply somebody standing somewhere, people gathering around. Mostly when we go to real theater buildings, there will be a stage that is quite actually defined. And then there's many forms of that. The one that is very evident is to keep out sounds and noise, and you put a wall around it. It's not, however, a simply practical thing, because once you put a wall around it, you also have somewhere a door where you can keep people out and let people in. It's a basic fact that all the Western theater has given an important role to this entrance and exit control, and in two ways, or you pay or you're invited, and like all royal theaters were there on invitation. So Venice was really actually the first theater where you had to pay for a ticket. So everybody, between brackets, because it was so expensive that hardly anybody could get in, but it was the first place where you could go to a theater without being invited, but just paying your ticket. So suddenly putting this wall around makes a huge difference in what is happening. So there's a double role. It's access control, and it's, of course, also the wall is enhancing the Stimmung, the atmosphere of the play, because if there's cars driving around, so this wall around also makes it possible to mark the beginning and the ending in a much clearer way than you could do it on a public space like this one here. So this has gone to a situation that we know very well, that here is public and the stage, here's the actors, and that's the public. Now, this coming and going happens in a different way for the actor and for the public. So usually they have a different entrance. And if not, it's always done on purpose. And this situation means that there's a front side on the performance and a back side. This is important because one of the things you can play with in theater, because this is the usual situation, this is the basic situation. If somebody is playing en rond and the public is around, there's a very specific choice, which is in fact a kind of amendment to this basic frame. So if somebody is doing that, playing in the middle of the public, it's like a very strong statement already. So the piece is already has half of its meaning simply because somebody is not doing this. It basically changes everything you can see and understand afterwards simply by the fact that somebody is changing this situation. So if, for instance, there's public like this, around, and the actor is here, this makes, for instance, for the fact that an actor cannot come out of the wings, but has to go through the public to get to its place, which is in many ways difficult, and it's in many ways also difficult to make a clear start and a clear stop to the performance, because how do you get out and come in again? So Arjan Mnuchin, for instance, has played a lot with this thing, like how can you make a kind of community of theater. Mm-hmm. Also, Meyerholt, for instance, his ideal theater was a theater in which it was like almost a sports stadium, mm-hmm. with very steep tribunes, mm-hmm. and the play was in the middle, but the actors were running around the public, mm-hmm. and were coming down, mm-hmm. and playing and getting out again, or sitting in the public, which is very, very different from this one. Mm-hmm. But it can only mean something, this kind of specific new conception of theater only means something because we have this kind of prototypical idea of this situation. So it's really important to keep this in mind, that theater always starts from a kind of prototypical idea, and then every modern director actually has been tampering and trying to amend this situation. So and try to find his own way and try to express things simply through the way he lets the actor come in and lets the public come in and have them interfere with each other. That's an important thing. But a theater building is never only like this. We can call this the inner circle of the theater, which has two halves. But there's also an outer circle, mm-hmm. and there's even two outer circles. Okay. And now we get a more complex drawing. These two spaces are, on principle, hermetically closed from each other. Mm-hmm. So there's no passage, but I will come back to that. Of course, there's always a passage, and sometimes it's a very important passage, but it's a passage that is, let's say, mentally it's not there. Mm-hmm. So, and now we talk about two different ways of coming to the theater. So this space around, we can call it, to keep it simple, the outer circle. Now the actor is coming in here. He's always coming in from the artist's entrance. And he's coming in as himself. I mean, an actor on the street is just a normal person. And there is this space here is a kind of transformation space in which he is preparing for his role as Rendell. And so this is a kind of secret passage, mm-hmm. which has not a public character at all. You could even say that it's invisible. Mm-hmm. So usually in old theaters, which are the prototypical theaters, you have to look for the artist's entrance. It's not something that attention is drawn to. On the other hand, the public here comes into a kind of very glamorous space, usually, mm-hmm. at least in old theaters. Mm-hmm. When you go over the threshold, and for that I think it's also very funny that people speak about eliminating the threshold between theater and the street is completely ridiculous, because then there's no theater anymore. Because what is happening is that from someone on the street, nobody, you become public. Just as the actor is changing in going through this, but in a kind of secret, non-public way, the nobody becomes a person, becomes public in this passage. And like, for instance, in opera, this tradition is still there. People really dress to go to theater. And also what happens in this space is that you can see who else is there. And everybody is really checking on each other. So it's a really important space in which, well, it's a kind of group feeling in the sense of we together are a kind of society who is going to do something which we consider important for us and for the way we think about ourselves. So this is transformation. It's also, and that's the bit less funny part of it, at least in our democratic times, we hate to think about that. But of course, it's a space of segregation. So what you get if you develop this a bit more, then you could also say that this zone, which now is drawn here as a wall,
could become thicker. You can have lodges, so, and that's places where people can retreat and come to the fore. And it's a very important space in theaters, and mm-hmm. so now you see where we're heading at, and here is the king, of course, because he needs the best view, because it's about perspective. But this thick wall is actually of enormous importance, because it's like the embodiment of the transformation of somebody who's simply on the street, who's walking around, into somebody who takes a very conscious place in a social event, mm-hmm. and who is really showing himself, but can also retreat. So there's this kind of buffer zone, which is really important. So what I have drawn is the Italian theater. Now, everybody's always wondering, and still today, so like Americans, but they're a bit silly about this, they think like, but we make better theaters because they make theaters like this, and they put all the chairs like that, and they leave a big distance here to the stage, and say, but you see, it's much better because everybody can see the performance better, as if seeing the performance is the only goal of theater, which it's not, of course. It's not. So the Italian theater is much more clever about what theater is than this kind of rational auditorium, which is total nonsense, actually. Because then you go to TV, or you go to the cinema. There's one more. That is that people who visit this, they go in the auditorium, and they go out the same way. So also the leaving of the theater is a kind of solemn moment, not only coming in, but also getting out. And the space in between where you can talk, where you can drink, etc., and take leave of everybody is a very important moment. So it's not only that on the stage you have a start and stop, but also in this place you have a kind of beginning and a kind of ending. Now, if you think, well, why is this important? For instance, cinemas don't have this. In a cinema, this could be a cinema if this is a screen. In a cinema, usually people come in like this, and in the end they go out like that, because then the new public can come in like from that side. So it's much more like a kind of percolator. So you're filtering through it, and it's like this moment here, when you're here, you forgot about yourself. Cinema is about forgetting. This is about being heavily present. All these modern theater directors always forget about this, and they want the public to shut up and be in the dark and do nothing. And that's their problem, because they kill the theater that way, because then they would better make films. So actually, this being so explicitly present is really something of theater and not of anything else. And so here we're talking about the glory days of theater. But what you can see in the 19th century, and that it's quite an interesting development, that is that till the late end of the 18th century, this space was relatively modest always. It was beautifully decorated, etc., but it was relatively modest. It was still the auditorium was still the heart of the place. What happens in the 19th century is that this is the auditorium, and this is the outer circle. I'm not exaggerating. It's almost like that. So if you take it in surface, then this outer circle with its salons and its staircases and its restaurant, it's totally huge compared to what it really is about, and that is this kind of confrontation in a very public manner. Of the people who are sitting and watching the performance and the performance itself, which in this situation was also always a very lively event, in the sense that people really commented upon things, went in and out, went 3-4 times to a performance. Also, for the actors, this was not so nice, but they were also hissing away bad actors and stuff like that. So. In 19th century, this place as a kind of place of being publicly present became less important, so the becoming a public went out of the auditorium into the outer circle. And what happened in the 20th century was then the inverse movement was that this was growing again, and this was limited to almost nothing. Mm-hmm. So nowadays, as a public, you're treated like shit. Everything is about the performance. If you would make kind of drawing of the importance that different parts have, like the 17th, 18th century theater, you have a very nice division between the public side and the actor side, who have a kind of very neat balance. In the 19th century, this kind of public side is becoming, in a sense, more important. But in the auditorium, very little is happening. And in the 20th century, the opposite is happening. That is like the public has become like this, and all is about the art of the actor. So, well, in this situation, the idea of art was, this was like art, question mark. Here, art became really important, but actually nobody was interested in it. And here you have art. That's the situation we're in. Well, this situation we're in has meant that directors have started to amend this kind of situation, and as I already gave the example of Nushkin and Meyerhold, but actually almost any important director, Max Reinhardt, we have to get back on the street. And then in the 70s you had this whole movement of going into factories, and then now we're using old buildings, and everybody's trying to get more reality into the theater, or to get a different relation with the public. But actually they always, in some sense, refer to this basic situation of what the theater is. Every modern-day theater actually is struggling with this kind of old model, which is a very strong model, but which has lost its glamour, on the one hand because the directors and the actors wanted to be better appreciated, or they wanted to be more considered as artists and not simply as a kind of artisans who can imitate others, which even in the 18th century till the very last of the 18th century, the basic idea about an actor was that it's like a carpenter or something, but then it's a craftsman, it's somebody, and you pay him, and he's a servant. And so that has changed completely. What we didn't talk about, of course, is all popular theater that is completely out of the scheme. Mm-hmm. So the whole Commedia dell'arte, which has always been there, is completely out of the scheme, mm-hmm. and it's a totally different logic that is playing there. But it's like something always to be conscious of when you speak about theater or dance or choreography, that you think about what relation do they have to this basic model?
What is the importance of this whole thing, this theatricality, is of course that the rules of theatricality govern actually a lot of other social phenomena that are completely outside the theater. So for instance, if any form of justice is actually functioning completely according to the same rules, and you can even see it, like judges are dressing in a different way, and they become actors, they become like something that they're not. And there is a kind of performance, and there is also rules. So, for instance, a judge cannot say, I want these kind of guys in jail, but he has to find arguments in the law to get this guy in jail. The same goes for all kinds of education. The way, for instance, teachers and pupils are relating to each other is governed by certain rules and a certain game, in which, for instance, a teacher cannot fall in love with. He can, of course, but he cannot show it. So there's this kind of things that are always kept out. So it's in that sense always an incomplete world, but this incompleteness makes it possible to make some things also more clear. Because you exclude things, other things can come to the fore and can be discussed in a profound way, and there's really rules that make you, that force you to stay in the game and to be correct in that game. So this model of theatricality is really not it's not innocent. Mm-hmm. It's a way of thinking mm-hmm. that has a kind of densification in the actual theater building, but is in fact governing a much broader field of society as a whole. And but you can feel or that the decline of mm-hmm. theater as mm-hmm. an art form or a social practice, because it's a double thing. It's not simply an art form, it's also a social practice. And the rise of television as a relation to public happenings has also largely affected, but in the wrong way, but affected this kind of social play we have in different fields. Mm-hmm. People are not that used anymore to this kind of relation you have towards another, this kind of engaging in a certain game and excluding other things. Things become much more personal and less clear, which has its advantages but also its problems. That's the way it is, I think. So you can complain about that or not, but it doesn't change things. So...